The days of old when the ground did fold all along the great fog line. In the days of old when the tremors rolled in the quake of 89. With a mighty shake of the largest quake since the one in 1906. Bridges fall in the fatal swell of asphalt, rock, and bricks. Currents stopped and gas pipes popped and homes went up in flame. Lives displaced and lives erased would never be the same. In the days of old when the ground did fold all along the great fog line. In the days of old when the tremors rolled in the quake of 89. From Frisco Bay to Monterey, the land turned upside down. People prayed as buildings swayed and toppled to the ground. In Oakland and in old San Fran, the city's fans were shook. People cried and people died and phones ran off the hook. In the days of old when the ground did fold all along the great fault line. In the days of old when the tremors rolled in the quake of 89. Then came the news from Santa Cruz of the fated garden ball. That what was left beside the cleft would see the wrecking ball. And in the hills where red would still grow sturdy, straight and tall, 200 homes heaved in the loam and torn apart did fall. In the days of old when the ground did fold all along the great fog line. In the days of old when the tremors rolled in the quake of 89. Through the aftershocks, the streets and blocks of people pulled together. Tales of greed and heroic deed filled cities changed forever. And much was lost when the best was tossed in a 15-second jolt. It was no joke when nature spoke with a cracking thunderbolt. In the days of old when the earth did fold all along the great fog line. In the days of old when the tremors rolled in the quake of 89.
And that was a bootleg tape, actually a custom-made tape, by political songster Mark Levy, who is actually a Santa Cruz local of a sort. He lives up in the hills and did a number of famous songs, has issued a number of albums, including his famous song that I remember most is the second song on this tape, which I'd actually hoped to play first, called 999 Points of Light. It's a story about Sandra Lohinger, or Sly Shoes Sandy, as I used to call her, the soup server who still works for Food Not Bombs, who was serving cups of soup at the town clock in 1989 when she was taken in by the Santa Cruz City Police, arrested, and then eventually tried, convicted, and served, 23 days in jail, something like that, for the crime of serving free food to the homeless in Santa Cruz. They claimed that she had not gotten a health permit. She said she didn't need a health permit to share healthy food from her own kitchen and sandwiches that she'd made up. And, of course, she was right, and the city has not been stupid enough to repeat that particular error. And Mark Levy did a great song on that called 999 Points of Light, but what you just heard was his song about the great quake of 89, during which, apparently, or somewhat, mythology has it, everyone pulled together. Actually, they divided people into the pre-quake and the post-quake homeless, and there's a whole story to be told around homeless rights struggles in and around the earthquake and after the earthquake. But we have the same kind of emergency, and the city council has recognized that, as you may know if you've been following city council activities. A week ago, they voted to declare a shelter emergency. 2 days later, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless reversed a longstanding policy and declared they would keep open the open-air shelter, the only legal place for people to sleep in Santa Cruz, outside at least during the month of December, and we are hoping throughout the entire winter, though that remains to be negotiated, and at the moment they are still planning to evict people in January once they have their permits for the community house trailer project, which we've discussed a lot here. This is a project that will house somewhere between 48, or actually between 40 and 70 people. The actual grant request, the CDBG grant funding request, mentions 48 from the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, but various figures have been bruited around. The campground itself currently contains somewhere between 200 and 300 people, unless, of course, they floated away in the morning rain, which is possible. Maybe we should send down their boats and floats and inner tubes. It's going to get pretty wet out there. So actually, this is really a call to everybody out there to keep in mind, everybody, I should say, under a roof, to keep in mind that we really need to get those folks winterized gear, protection for their tents, raincoats, rain boots, rain jackets, umbrellas, rubber boots, blankets, sleeping bags, you know, tents, winter coats, sweaters, scarves, hat, socks, rope, candle, Coleman stoves. Hey, whatever you've got that you're not using and can spare, give a call to Barbara Riverwoman at 425-5939. And if that answering machine is out of order, give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, and I'll make sure that this stuff gets out to the campground. You can also take it out there directly and leave it with Mike Bustos, who's the client services manager of the Homeless Community Resource Center at 115 Coral Street. Tell Mr. Bustos that it's intended for the Coral Street shelter, the folks at the campground, the folks on the field, and the open-air shelter. There are actually three or four different programs out there, so unless you specify it, it may get lost and go to one of the other programs, all the other of which have indoor facilities, but there ain't no indoor facilities or the outdoor campground. That's a contradiction in terms. And folks there are trying to weatherize their tents to make the best of it, and some of them are used to sleeping outside. They just want a place to legally sleep and legally be, and that is what this is going to be for the next month, thanks to the organizing work of the people out there, certain different community members, thanks to the good sense of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, which finally came through. Took a lot of pressure, but they came through at least for a month. We're hoping they're going to come through for the next 2 months. And also on the broader issue of not dumping the trailers on the campground if there's no other place for the campground to go. Well, this is an introduction to the rather late edition of Bathrobe Spears Broadsides for today, December 4th, 1995. I apologize again for being late to the studio. I had to rush out and get some tapes. This show is taped and sent north and rebroadcast on Liberation Radio in San Francisco, so that's why I have to do that. Plus, of course, I love to hear my own voice, as hopefully do you, and that's good, but of course, we would love to hear your voice, and the phone-in number is 427-3772, and hopefully the phone is working. See, the ringer is off, but I will keep an eye on for a blinking phone, which means you're calling in. 427-FRSC, 427-3772 is the number to call. This show specializes in civil rights for the poor issues, and indeed, sometimes we get into issues even within the movement of the civil rights for the poor, where the problems arise, where activists come into conflict with each other. That is, of course, legendary on the left. Groups split up into groups and fight each other instead of fighting the people at the top, and this is always a great laugh for the people at the top, and a great source of anguish to those of us who want to see real change in society. But there has a question has arisen recently regarding how to deal with people who are disruptive in meetings, who are violent, who are threatening, who are so angry that, or so enmeshed in personal disputes with the members of that group that they cannot maintain decorum. Now, I'm not a big advocate of decorum myself. I think it often serves to muffle protest, to muffle new thinking, to institutionalize bad processes, even in groups that are supposedly liberal. I mean, City Council of Santa Cruz uses a very repressive process to keep people shut up. I find that the Coalition to Decriminalize Poverty, which was the group that helped plan the 1994 sit-down protests, and we did get some massive protests there. I think the protests were massive not because the Coalition to Decriminalize Poverty planned them, but because of the issues and the publicity. But who knows? They certainly played a part. I mean, we certainly played a part. I was on that group. But the group spent hours arguing about philosophical issues, tiring out people so that they left, and real actions never got planned. There was a very lengthy consensus process, which I personally found oppressive. And I know many people like consensus, and Freedom Out Bombs and other groups use it. And indeed, it has been effectively used. And I'm used to working in smaller groups, I guess, where people just sort of generally of a like mind, kind of bat around ideas and then go for actions, which is what I have done myself in the past. But the question, so what I'm saying is that decorum is not always, I'm not always a big fan of sitting around waiting for an hour and a half while people introduce themselves and, you know, raise their hands and give a little speech around the circle and all that sort of thing. I'd like to go straight to, you know, what do you want to do? How can I help you? How can you help me? Let's get down to it as fast as we can. We all got better things to do and better places to be. However, there are other circumstances where people just act what I call nuts. And, of course, that's a word that I'm sure John Stewart, who's in the studio with me, hates. But let's turn on his mic so he gets a chance to interrupt me, if you like. Nonetheless, I'm using it colloquially rather than psychiatrically. I mean, you are on the air, John Stewart. Say hello to John.
My name is John Stewart. Hello out there, everybody. Lots of people know me.
Are you on the air? It's hard to tell if you're on the air.
Hello.
No,
hello.
I don't think
mic works.
I don't think mic two is working. I think we're going to share mic one here. Hello, hello. Well, it is kind of working. Yeah, mic two is working. Hello, testing mic two. Can you hear me? Okay, well, we're gonna huddle around mic one. John and I have always been good friends, and we're gonna get friendlier here at the station.
What do I do with this?
I think we should probably scrap it, send it back to Detroit or Taiwan or wherever it comes from.
Okay.
I think that there's been the question has arisen: what do you do to confront an individual who is angrily denouncing everyone, interrupting the process of the meeting, threatening people on occasion, and or let's just say whose behavior at earlier meetings has so enraged certain members of the meeting that they don't want to be in the same meeting with that person. Now, that's actually happened to me at other meetings where I feel my behavior has been quite respectable, but people in positions of power didn't like what I did or what I said about them. This happened in 1990, and they wanted me excluded from the meeting. So I'm real touchy about excluding anybody from any meeting, even if they've been violent before, even if they've been threatening outside. Literally, I will wait until a person almost strikes a blow before I would, you know, get that person out of the meeting. That's just my preference. But John, you've taken a somewhat different perspective on this.
Well, there's something other than physical violence. There's emotional violence and spiritual violence where someone is so loud, so vituperative, so full of invective in their what they have to say and their accusations, that they become it becomes painful to be in their presence. It hurts. It hurts you. It hurts us emotionally, and the emotional hurt feelings, to my way of thinking, may be a far more devastating pain than physical pain, and the oppression that results from the kinds of from what I'm talking about, violent talk, threatening talk, more than talk, shouting, yelling, calling people liars, calling people names, are, to my way of thinking, something that we need to confront, something we can't ignore. This gets to be a problem. I'm talking in general terms, and most people out there nevertheless know that there is one particular individual I'm actually referring to, and his name is Chris Brazda. And Chris Brazda has caused all sorts of problems to our community. He's threatened several of us, and the consequence of our tactics have utterly failed. They've left Kim Argula, Robert Floyd, and Robert Norris, and maybe Ed Frye, more or less isolated as the focus of his attacks, as if his attacks upon them were their personal problem and not our problem as a community. From my point of view, he is a community problem, and his actions should be confronted in the manner in which Women Against Rape once upon a time confronted men who had assaulted or harassed women, which was to say they would gather together with Men Against Rape and go to the individual and confront them, at which confrontation the woman took back her power. It's obvious to me from the meeting last night of the Radio Collective here that the people, that the ignoring of this this individual's actions and trying to just stay away from him and avoid him has left these people, our friends, isolated. We should confront this person as a collective, as a whole group of people. I see the phone is ringing, although
I'm not going to answer the phone right now. Caller, keep calling. We're gonna put you on next, yeah. But I want to just say something briefly about this.
Right.
I tend to, you know, I think I both agree and disagree with your statement, and of course I'm assuming that Chris will call in and give his view on the perspective, and of course as he's welcome to do. I don't think that either Ed, I, Robert Flory, or Kim Argula, and I'm the Robert Norris referred to, have actually asked for any assistance from the group. But again, that's not really the point you're making. The point you're making is that, and caller, please call again. We are gonna put you on the air when you call again. So please call right in, 427-3772, and you are calling in. But should we see what the caller has to say?
I would like to make one point, one last point. When one of my friends is attacked, someone who I admire, whose work and actions I consider important in the work to counteract and work against the oppression of the totalitarian version of the capitalist system that we're working, I consider that an attack against me personally. Thank you. And personally is political, you know.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi, Robert. This is Patrick.
Oh, hi, Patrick.
Hi.
You're the video journalist who's been so instrumental in getting a lot of information about the SOS Save Our Shelter campground struggle out to the public.
Yes, that Patrick.
Yes, indeed.
I have a comment to the gentle people of Santa Cruz. I know Chris Brazda, and I feel that we could all help Chris, and that he's withholding a lot of anger that he feels has been bestowed upon him unjustly. And I think that he means well, but he probably has run out of patience.
Could I say something?
Please do.
This is John Stewart. I think that if Chris Brazda ever asks us for help and tells us, if you ask me in particular, will I help him? And if he tells me in what way I may be able to help him, and if, there are three ifs here, if I am able to do that, I will. But until he does, for us to talk about helping Chris Brazda is to me a way of denigrating him as an individual. We should respect his right to ask for help if he wants it, and respect his right to refuse help that we offer when he hasn't asked for it. So far, I believe that he's refused people's help that they've offered. In that regard, but anyway, that's what I have to say about that.
May I respond?
Sure, go ahead, Patrick.
Yes. I think his actions, in fact, are a clear request for help.
That's in the absence of an actual request for help. I hope that someone doesn't come on you someday telling you that your actions are a request for help and force their help upon you. Do you understand the situation?
I hear you.
Do you understand? It's a civil rights issue, not a mental health issue. It's a civil rights issue.
I think it's these kinds of things that divide the people with the real causes and the real grassroots, ongoing, immediate thing here that's going on, which is people need a new program and the old ones need to be looked at. But I think that we should all be talking about the homeless people and what we can do, the good things we can do. And Chris, we can all maybe agree that he hasn't been going about it the correct way, but
it's not a matter of the correct way. It's a matter of a very threatening, violent way. He's asked me out twice now. He wants to kick my ass. You think he doesn't really?
Yeah, I think he doesn't
I'm sorry, but I can't relate myself to him on the basis of what you think, if you understand what I mean.
What did you do to him?
What did I do to him? I asked him when, let's see, he was standing out in front of the collective, radio collective meeting, and I asked him, well, are you here to apologize for threatening Clem Ardula and hitting Robert Morris and threatening Robert Foy with a broken bottle? And he said, drop dead. And,
then
he continued to curse me out, whereupon I continued to ask him, well, what else bad
you
think?
You asked the wrong question, didn't you?
So, well, listen, Patrick, anything more you want to add?
Yeah, I really want to wish everybody lots of good health, and I think that Santa Cruz is the very most...
Can I say one thing before you hang up, please?
Yes. I'm not done, actually.
Okay. Well, the thing I would like to see is that if Chris Brosnan doesn't like the politics of food, not bombs, which he says he doesn't, very vociferously, if he doesn't like the politics of particular people in Food Not Bombs and the way they run their organization, then the question is, why doesn't he start his own organization based on his principles and his political direction with his philosophy, and instead of attacking individuals and people and organizations that are doing something? You understand what I mean? Isn't that a positive thing for him to do?
I kind of feel and sense your drift is a good thing, that it would be nice to channel Mr. Brazda's energies in a very positive way like that.
He purports to have political ideas and political direction that are of some value, and no doubt he may have, but he is an utter waste in the way he's attacking people in our organization, in the Radio Collective and in Food Not Bombs.
I think he's run out of patience.
Anything more, Patrick?
No, thank you very much for your listening.
Hey, thank you, Patrick.
Thank you.
No, I don't think you're too loud, John. But I am going to call a halt for this topic pretty quick. But I'm not going to kick you out. I just want to.
I don't know of anything else.
No, I'd like to see this issue as a broader issue for organizations. Although every case is unique, of course, when an individual.
Well, in this particular odds with a group. Case, it's like we were acting. In this particular case, we were talking about this general as if the particular didn't exist when everybody knows who the particular is that we're actually talking about. The general case, nevertheless, I believe it should be action should be taken in a confrontational manner as practiced by the people of Women Against Rape and Men Against Rape when they confronted people who were violent against women, and the women who were who had been hurt took back their power by having their say against those people. That's what I think.
Right. Okay. Well, I think that's certainly a an approach worth considering, and I'm going to, look forward to your future reports on whether you're able to organize such a group. Frankly, I think it's a waste of energy in a certain sense. In another sense, it's not. You'll be able to say your thing, but I want to say my thing first, and you can say your thing after I say my thing. No problem. It's a waste of energy. Keep me thinking. Hold that thought.
I got it.
Okay. The reason I think it's a waste of energy is because I find myself wasting more and more energy over the whole subject. I got a harassing phone call last night from Chris Brosda, and
I wrote him an email, and I said, don't phone me ever again until you get permission to do so. You know, do it on the email. Of course, I told him this 2 weeks ago, and he didn't respond to that. But again, this isn't a matter of personality thing. The question is, when you have someone who really has something he wants to say, who really feels he has to keep talking to people, and I guess it's a point at which a political message becomes personal harassment. Now, city council members use this against you when they say, oh, well, you can't call a city council member at home, or can't call the mayor, or don't talk mean to me, or don't name call me. No, I think those things are quite appropriate, to speak your mind, to speak your feelings. Even to speak your feelings inside a group when you disagree, even to get mad inside a group, and even do a little name-calling inside a group. Hey, that can happen too. Might not be the best thing. The problem is when it becomes threatening and actually physically violent. And again, I kind of take issue with you on the psychic violence thing, because I think it's such a hard thing
to...
It's
not a matter of psychic. Who said psychic?
No, I'm sorry. Psychological violence?
Right.
Sorry.
Emotional.
Psychological hurt. I mean, I think the problem is, you know, that when you go into a political forum, there is a certain assumption of responsibility. So if I've got to be able to take it when I come into a psychological forum, I mean, into a political forum, and it is also a psychological forum. And here's an incoming call.
Let me make this one, caller,
hang on while John makes his last point, or momentary point, anyway.
From my point of view, it's a waste of energy trying to ignore the person. You take back your energy by confronting this individual. As regards you got to be ready. If you come into a political forum, you've got to be emotional ready. I think that those of us who are willing to go into political forums should work to make those forums amenable to people who are more sensitive, who are more feeling than we are as regards hurt feelings in those forums. Make it safe for them.
True enough. Hi there, Carl. You're on Free Radio Santa Cruz, and what seems to be the most personal debate of the season.
Yeah, this is Nutcracker Nick.
How are you doing, Nutcracker Nick?
I'm fine. I think this is actually necessary to deal with. Recall three instances where somebody has been violently treated in our circle in the past year, and all of them have left town. So the effect of someone's violence causes injured people sometimes to leave the area.
Right.
Are you talking about violence by Mr. Brazda or violence by other people?
I'm just saying this is a pattern I observe. If people like this are not got in check, sooner or later they cause such injury to others that the person feels almost having to evict themselves from Santa Cruz.
Well, you see, here's the problem. I mean, I think that what you say is true if you're dealing with like a strange wolfish marauder who comes into the scene and does rape or violence, and then these circumstances, or even an individual who maintains one face in the community and then is a rapist, or an abuser underneath and engages in those activities. In those circumstances, I feel that John's approach of confronting makes a lot of sense. The problem is when you get into these situations where, for instance, the four people that have been threatened or assaulted by Chris Brazda in the last month, the four people that John Stewart mentioned, myself, Kim Argula, Robert Flory, and John Stewart himself, Ed Fry, I'm sorry, John didn't mention himself. It was Ed Fry. We are not interested in seeking
help.
Well, I am not interested in seeking help on this, and I have not heard any of these other individuals, and I talked to two of them last night.
We're offering you help, right?
No. Let me finish. I mean, I'm going to give you a chance, John. That is to say, it's a situation where we all know this guy. He's been around for a while. Some of us stereotype him as loony, you know, in that way, which, you know, is of course a stereotyping phenomenon.
That's fine. I want to propose a course of action.
Go ahead.
I think that the people who've been injured or threatened with injury by this person, every individual among them, is entitled to take out a restraining order on Chris Brazda. This is a normal thing that any normal citizen would do, except that we are a very tolerant group of humanitarians, and we don't like doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And the consequences to Chris should be thought through before that is done. But he's really at that stage where nothing would stop him. He's come really close to doing stuff to me, too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he's going to submit to any psychic or spiritual persuasions unless by a hypnotherapist.
John, are you a hypnotherapist, Chris?
Oh,
I'm sorry, go ahead.
But everyone's entitled to a legal restraining order against this person, which is a pretty mild reaction.
Well, you know how much those cost? They cost $100 and, I don't know, but $100.
Whatever it is.
It's $100 to $150, unless you can get them in a court.
The whole bureaucratic procedure is really prohibitive. I have a friend who recently got one, and it took her like 2 weeks and an amount of money she really couldn't afford.
But there is something we can do. You can get a restraining order in the course of a judicial hearing on an actual criminal charge. So, for instance, I filed two complaints with the police regarding Chris's striking me a week and a half ago, and also his threatening me the next day. And those two complaints were forwarded to the police department, who very solemnly assured me that the DA would be considering them, that possibly a restraining order would be issued at a judicial hearing, as a, you know, prior to any trying of the case. Of course, I heard nothing further on that issue, and I haven't pressed for it. But after receiving a series of not particularly threatening, but generally nuisance phone calls from Brazda after I'd instructed him not to call in the last 2 weeks, as I said, I sent him an email last week which informed him that any further phone calls of any sort whatsoever would result in my making a third complaint for nuisance phone calls, plus going down to the district attorney and requesting immediate action on these cases. And I would also begin to encourage other people to file complaints so as to get the criminal process, however bogus, stupid, abusive, punitive, and oppressive it is, on his case. I mean, that's really the, and if you're listening, Chris, that's where it's at the moment. And if you're not, he'll be reading his email on that issue. It's not because I'm personally feeling threatened by Chris at the moment. It's because I don't want to feel threatened at the next, on the next occasion. I don't want to be affected with nuisance stuff. This is no way to prohibit Chris from participation in public meetings. I disagree with John on this. I'm sorry. Like Food Not Bombs meetings, I stood aside in that case.
I do want to take the opportunity.
I don't mean Food Not Bombs. I mean Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hello.
Yes, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I do want to take the opportunity, if Chris is listening or if anybody who knows Chris is listening, assure him that I am not without love for him. I am not without respect for the good things that he tries to do.
Right.
But I just think I just want Chris to know that he's overboard, and short of us all grabbing him and bringing him to the ground, which would create another police scene, there's nothing we could do except put him under a legal restraining order. It's a desperate measure, but we might have to do it.
Well, I've got no problem with a restraining order if it could be done economically. I just think that the only real way to do that is to start filing complaints, and when they finally DA gets sufficient complaints and pressure, he'll take Chris to court. And of course, what's going to happen to Chris is he's on probation, so his probation will be violated because he's not obeying all laws. This kind of behavior is not, and he will go to jail probably for two or three months. I'm not quite sure. He knows this, yet he continues to act the way he does, indicating to some of us that he thinks being abusive in this fashion, or getting his message out this way, or expressing his feelings as he's doing, is more important to him than the risk of jail, as well as, of course,
a person who lacks self-control, who doesn't know how to control themselves, they actually need the law to show them the consequences of that. That's a structure that they need to encounter.
Well, I don't know if they need it, but maybe we need it. I don't know if we need it, even we need it, but I mean, let's put it this way. It's there to be used, and the other alternative is things like, I don't know, calling in the witches or the thugs. I don't know what else you're going to do.
There's a group called Men Against Violence, but getting...
I went to look for them this morning. They're not around anymore.
Yeah, they do meet out here in my area.
Oh, they do?
But they don't seem like a group who would intervene. One would have to bring Chris... secure Chris's agreement to participate in them, which would take a change of attitude on his part for him to realize that he's being overly violent.
Well, I was once in the Men Against Rape here in Santa Cruz when Glenn was one of the chief organizers of it, and I'm still a strong advocate of confrontation with someone like Chris Brazda. I think that
you're being forced to play the cop in our group.
No, I'm not playing the cop. I'm playing the advocate for a strategy to handle this particular problem that Chris presents. As for myself, I'm not going to back down to him. I'm going to back up and run in doorways and etc. and not let him get his hands on me if I can help it, you understand. But I'm not going to get out of his space, hide, and let him take my power away from him. When I was at that meeting last night here at the Radio Collective, and he was outside handing out leaflets after his spewing venom out there for 15 minutes or so. It was a very subdued, oppressive situation inside there where people were could not, it appeared to me that everyone was, too concerned about his presence outside, too concerned about his presence outside to be fully at the meeting. So the situation is one of sort of spiritual, emotional oppression that he brings with him when he comes to places like that. So you may get restraining orders, several of you may, but the experience of women with restraining orders and the men who attack them is that the attack comes and the restraining order is of no use. If you understand what I'm saying.
Do you want to say something, Nick? Or
yeah, I just want to say that Sharif has had to leave town. Sharif is the black man who had
right.
his head split open by three racist guys.
Right.
And so he's had to leave town. I see part of the reason for him leaving town is undoubtedly that unresolved situation because he saw the assailant against him out on the street soon afterwards. He had not pressed for a hate crime prosecution. If he had, they might have kept that fella in the jail longer.
Well, no, I was there, Nicholas, when he was making the phone calls to force them to make it a hate crime, and they wouldn't do it.
Well, okay, so there's another example
it's
of...
The DA, the DA yeah. wouldn't act on it.
Yeah. So there's an example of insufficient discipline
right.
being put on somebody, and now our friend Sharif has had to leave town. This happened to the person whose ribs were cracked in that demonstration.
Jason,
by the police.
Yeah, that was 1994, the sit-down demonstration.
The police were never taken to court on that one, and Jason had to leave town. And I've met numerous homeless people who, because they've been roughly treated, to say the least, out in the woods when they're camping, they also have left town. So that's the pattern that emerges. The bullies get away with it unless we are very effective with our counter-strategy.
It's also true that Candlelight Kim Argula is leaving town, but I don't think Chris is forcing her to leave town. She's taking a vacation.
Not sure.
No, I'm not leaving town. Ed Pryor isn't leaving town, and I don't think Robert Flory is leaving town. So I really regard this as a case of a different kind than an anonymous marauder. You know,
right.
I mean, this is somebody we know. This is somebody who, in my mind, does good political work at other times. And the problem I have is, I mean, John is going to jump on my case here. I talked to his mom. His mom says, well, it's wintertime now. He's very depressed. He's not taking his meds and all this sort of thing, you know. And to write this off as a kind of... it's not. I mean, you can't write it off as a violent marauder, and also it's difficult to say. Well, you know, he's just a crazy guy who needs to be sent to Dominican for a couple of days.
No, that would not be.
Well, that's not politically correct for me to even discuss that. You know, I mean,
it's not a matter of political correct. It's it can be utterly devastating for the person involved, and people don't learn. From those kinds of actions.
But is there a significant difference between throwing somebody into jail and between doing that and between throwing someone into a psychiatric jail? Well, you're going to get drugged in a psychiatric jail, but you're probably going to get drugged in the goddamn other jail if you're a Chris Brazda, you know?
From my understanding and experience, practically every county jail now has a separate psychiatric jail within the jail.
Right.
To which people who they can't otherwise handle or choose not to handle otherwise are funneled. In those psychiatric jails are basically isolation cells where they pump them full of usually Haldol in large doses and a huge needle in the buttocks, which can turn a person into a veritable somnambulistic zombie within a very short time. People who have mere criminal charges against them, and who don't have the psychiatric label, fare much better in the system than in any system than do the people who have the psychiatric label.
I think Chris would acquire psychiatric labels.
He already has the psychiatric label. Plus, if he went in there
under the violent label, with his size and his ways of action, I can guarantee you that psych techs and county sheriffs psychiatrists along the way will find ways to provoke him. They do it routinely. They love it. They love to beat the hell out of people. That is to say, excuse me, not all of them. There are some. When you meet one, you've met one too many who love to beat you up and fill you full of
psych techs
and county sheriffs. And an incredible example lies in a vegetative state in Valley Medical Center right now. His name is Joseph Leitner. He was picked up on the streets of San Jose in a drunken condition. They beat him up. They covered his head with a blanket. They suffocated him and deprived him of oxygen long enough to brain damage him permanently. That fate is potentially, possibly anyone's who gets a violent label and goes into the county jail.
And see, therein lies the problem and the dilemma that we in the community have with respect to Chris.
So looking at this more hopefully, there may be people in the audience who are familiar with groups or county services that have an intervention system. But it would have to be an on-the-street intervention that we could call in. People who know how to handle a guy like him with...
Yeah, I say Dennis and John is writhing away.
I say stay away from the mental health system, stay away from mental health professionals.
I didn't necessarily say the mental health system. There may be counselors in town who've just had a lot of experience. Well, maybe we should call in the deadheads.
Nicholas, I think that we are skilled enough. And
well, we have not shown this at all. I haven't shown it. You've shown more than I've shown, actually.
Well,
but I don't think anybody's being effective.
That's just it. The course of action I'm advocating will give us enough experience to find out. You understand that...
Yeah, but
that
you're talking about broken bottles threatening to cut into a girl's face. I think that's pretty extreme. I'm not permissive to that extent, no.
You're not what?
I'm not permissive to the extent of somebody threatening a person with broken glass in their face.
What?
I think that's urgent when it gets...
No, those kinds of events occur when the other person controls and determines the where and under what circumstances the confrontation occurs. When we as a group decide to take action and gather together, we determine when and where and under what circumstances the confrontation occurs.
Setting up an effective confrontation, well, how can you visualize that? Does that mean going to Chris's home? Does that mean following him around in a circle?
Well, for one thing, it would be planning in advance that any time he comes around, we don't allow him to isolate one or another of us, but that we all gather around him.
Well, yeah, that sounds... that's what we did. I've lived in communal situations. That's exactly what we did. And so long as there's both love together with authority...
Right, well, I'm not talking about the kind... Nicholas, I'm not talking about the kind of confrontation where we sit and hurl curses and names at someone.
No, I realize that.
You understand? I'm talking about a confrontation in which we talk our concerns for ourselves.
Yeah, but this guy's in an emotional, illogical state. You're talking about a rational approach.
No, that's exactly the point. If we... Well... Everyone can talk about whether or not he's rational or irrational. The question has nothing to do with that, but it has to do with right and wrong and ethical values. You understand what I'm talking about?
Yeah, but he's not aware of that. So.
Well, that's what you say, but I'm not willing to assume that about him.
Well, he hasn't shown me that he's aware of it.
In those circumstances, that may be true, and he may be a bully forever and die a bully, but I believe that for our sakes, to take back the power that we've given him as a consequence of avoiding him and trying to ignore him, we, for ourselves, need to do this.
Yeah, well, I think you're on the right track, and I'll be a party to it, sure.
Any other, since we got you on the phone, Nick, anything else from SPAN, Stop Police Abuse Now, which you have been involved with?
Well, there was a raid. There had been a raid at Fire's house, you know.
At whose house?
Oh. 10 cops.
Oh, yes, the raid last month.
So I went down there, but Fire was the only one I could find who wanted to make...
A complaint.
Yeah, and even she's a bit apprehensive about it because she has a child.
And she's concerned about CPS, which is something we'll be discussing in the shows ahead, at least CPS's
problems.
But
it was interesting that the men in the household told me that considering the police had come down there with a warrant that said somebody might have firearms there,
mm-hmm.
they thought the police actually had the right to handcuff them all.
That's new to me. I think,
No, there were three guys down there who said the police were very polite, and once they realized that the weapon they were looking for was just like an old, historic, rusty old blunderbuss or something,
mm-hmm.
they realized that they got a bum story.
I see.
They were not rough, but fire